o'clock, and this is Town of Bolton Board of Selectmen AP meeting. It is Tuesday, February 11th, 6 p.m. It's a Zoom meeting and also in-person meeting. First.
Mr. Selectman?
Yes.
Mr. Sadler will not be here for a few more minutes. He's on his way. And Mr. Fournier is unavailable.
Right. Thank you.
I'll make a motion to approve the AP budget as presented in the amount of $202,379.96.
Second.
Motion is made and second. Are there any questions? Yes.
There were two late fees on page 13 and 14 for Lowe's. I was just wondering why we're owing late fees to Lowe's.
15, 14.
Bottom of 13, top of 14.
So I can't answer that specifically because I'm not the guy in charge of those bills. That is the Buildings and Grounds Department. But our budget approval process takes about 27 days. So it is not unusual to have an occasional late for here and there. So I suspect it's a matter of when the bills came in and when they got paid.
So we don't have a process whereby like they don't have a credit card. Like for a place like Lowe's, they invoice.
We have an account.
Okay, we have an account. But if we get invoiced, we don't pay immediately. And then, okay.
Any other comments, questions? You have another one?
I have one regarding that. Is there an automatic payment setup that we can buy that? No, we can't.
That's your question?
Yes.
Okay.
On page 10, the Lori Road drainage improvements, I see that it's under the line item of town aid road expenditures. Does that mean that town aid road paid for the entire project?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. And weren't we talking about the paving the town hall parking lot and that was coming out of
I said that, but it's coming out of that in a roundabout way. Because you can't use, it's not a qualified expense under Town Aid Road. So what we will do next year when we do this project is we will use highway department funds that we would normally use for road repairs and road maintenance to pave the parking lot here at Town Hall. And we will augment their budget with money from Town Aid Road.
That's legitimate.
Yes, it's appropriate.
Okay, great.
We can even buy things like salt and sand. That sort of stuff with Town Aid Road.
Okay.
But we cannot pave town facility parking areas with them.
Okay. Thank you. And then on page 23, let's see, is it 23? Oh, yeah. Reimbursement, Lowe's, purchase of materials to build wall in portable building. Mm-hmm. What is that all about?
So there are a bunch of financial records that are stored in a portion of the Town Hall Annex building. And we are allowing individuals to use space in there for the test. They're doing air quality tests and actually looking at microscopes to determine when the abatement is done, whether or not there is still airborne particles of asbestos or other contaminants in the air. They needed a clean space to work. So we're allowing them to work in that space where the financial records are. So we needed to be able to secure those. Our auditor also works in there. We don't feel like we need to secure him from access to the financial records, but financial records should not be available for general public viewing. So we built it up.
Will that come down after the testing is done, or is that going to be a permanent wall?
So we've had conversations with the registrars of voters, and one of the things that we may have to do is they are getting new voting machines, which are significantly larger than the current voting machines. So that may end up being a space that we have to consider utilizing until we get some other appropriate storage space for voting machines. So it may end up having a future purpose as well as a current purpose.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And passes 6-0.
Make a motion.
0 and Rodney is absent. Okay.
And was that Gwen that seconded?
No.
Yeah.
No, Gwen made the motion. Pam seconded.
No, I didn't.
Amanda made the motion.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It came from that side of the table. Didn't see you.
Deputy Thank Sussman, you. We have budget transfers that are just for information and purposes only, so there's no assumption.
So you can move right to item 3A, 4 rather, which is adjournment of this meeting.
I move that we adjourn the meeting.
I'll second.
Second. All in favor? Aye. Unanimous. This meeting is adjourned. We now move into part 2. That is the budget review, and make sure everybody's got little packets and all. And I will call this portion of the meeting to order at
6:06.
And in this section, we're open to public comment. I do not see anyone on the board. Oh, we do. Okay. We have one person viewing. Any comments? Going once, twice. We're on to item 3, elections. And since we have our crew here from the elections, who would like, which one of you guys would love to start?
You know, I was going to say, like Amanda told me, you lost a little bit of that huge spreadsheet that I put together. So I will just start by saying that what we looked at the budget, we found some efficiencies in there. And I think I mentioned that in our either get our ads or deletions. I forget because we did not have to staff as much as we originally anticipated with some changes in the regulations that the Secretary of State put out, their interpretation of the new statutes for early voting. So we found that there was an opportunity in there to save some money, and at the same time also recognize that the responsibilities of our moderators and our registrars and assistant registrars have been increased substantially by state statute. So we did put in for an increase in the pay to those categories. And again, it's being paid for because I understand the need to keep an eye on the budget. The increase is being paid for through those staffing savings. And the only other thing we put in just like a very small raise for the poll workers, and it's basically giving them what we guess that the state will give them for a minimum wage increase at the end of this year for 2026.
So the state sets that?
Yeah, the state sets
it's minimum wage.
Straight minimum wage.
Yeah,
okay.
Straight minimum wage.
Okay.
They said it, the governor usually comes out October, November, says what it's going to start to be as of January.
Okay.
So like, we estimate that based on what inflation is, it's probably 3 or 4%. Let's just do it now. They work very hard, and it's hard to, recruit and retain, good poll workers.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the other things that I did mention in there that I would like to talk to you folks about. If there is an opportunity, if you feel that we're not going to have any, primaries, we usually struggle, both the Democrats and the Republicans, to find people, let alone to have to primary for people fighting over a particular
municipal office.
And so I put it in there rather than just not put it in the first place. I wanted to put it in there and then, have a conversation with you folks about what do you think the risk is? Because if the risk is minimal, that's where you can make a fairly substantial savings. I think it's like 1,000 change.
17 and change.
If we don't do that. The other ones that I don't really want to touch that I put in there, if you look at that long spreadsheet that shows what the elections look like, is for either a recount or an audit. Because there's a 5% chance of us having an audit every year, you know, for not, they don't, the state doesn't care about our referenda, but they will care about any of our municipal elections. And there's also the possibility we might need to do a recount and need, you know, one of the, you know, referenda or possibly with municipal elections. And those take up a substantial chunk of change. And I don't think we want to go scrambling, you know, for that money. As opposed to, let's just put it in there, it gets returned to the, you know, general fund at the end of the year, because I think that's easier than trying to find a chunk of like 30,000 bucks, whatever. So I think those would be the high points that I brought up, and I will just entertain any question. Or Sandy, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that. I just touched on the high part of it. The rest of it is all stuff we have to do, like our office hours. We have to be there. We're actually fully staffed for the first time ever that I've been involved, because we have Mary who's our Democratic assistant registrar, Bernice is the Republican one, we have Sandy and me, so this is the first time we actually have a full slate. Sandy and I have to do our training, which was delayed because of COVID and UConn's inability to put together any automated, any coursework that was online until this year. And so we, you know, have to be certified within 2 years. Sandy is overdue.
Not quite. I have until the end of May.
Oh. But, well, lucky you.
Yeah. But
I wanted to join the next term.
So everything else, and it's all mandatory. Like, we have to do outreach to the schools. I love the election. It's stuff we don't really have, you know, control over. It's a highly regulated job. And so we do basically what the state and federal governments tell us to do with the minimum amount of, you know, staffing that's required to do it.
Is your training all remote, or do you have to actually go?
It is not all remote. Ugh. Some of it's in person, some of it's remote. The training for registrar certification is all remote. However, there is in-person training that we also have to do. I believe it's 20 hours a year.
Yeah. And we get that out of the conferences that we go to in the spring and the fall. They serve two purposes. One is just for information gathering and networking, and then it also covers our basic continuing education. Mm-hmm. And that way we get that all. It's pretty much one and done. You go to the conference, you attend the seminars that they have there, and account, they check you up, and it's reported with the Registrar Voters Association of Connecticut that we've met.
Thank you.
Our work. State of Secretary of State sometimes also has separate courses and such, and we have to go to their monthly meetings. We have monthly meetings with the Secretary of State, monthly meetings with the Talent Association of the Registrars and Voters. So there's a lot that we have to keep up with.
And if I may, one more question.
Sure.
Do the poll workers, you have a lot of them that come back year to year, do they have to go through a retraining process?
They not only have to be retrained when they come back, but they have to be retrained for at least 2 hours before each and every election.
Well, so fortunately for the referendum, that counts as one ongoing election.
Oh, okay.
But we do train at the beginning of this, you know, at the beginning of the referendum. That is good because it's really like a continuation of the statement. Right. But if we do a primary, for, you know, we have to do training for early voting because it's a different type of activity than the, you know, voting during the primary. We do training again for that. So, like Sandy says, every election.
It's also a lot of work for the registrars of voters and our human resource folks to onboard all these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
the repeat ones are a little easier than new ones, but, you know, the onboarding process is daunting.
And we didn't touch upon, so there's the onboarding process too. So that's another good reason to retain these folks, because otherwise it's more cost, you know, behind the scenes or opportunity cost, you know, for, you know, the finance group. And there is also all the work that, you know, the town crews do to help set up and take down and clean up afterwards, particularly, you know, over at St. Morris, who's still gracious enough, I hope, for this year, to let us use their facilities. So that's also, you know, like I'm grateful, you know, to Jim for giving, you know, bringing in us into discussions with the architect for creative uses of, you know, rooms A and B going forward if we get some grant money. Because that would help with space for early voting and such.
Hey, Amanda, I've been taking the floor. You got it.
Did you happen to do comps for any of the wages, like how we compare to other towns?
I will tell you that Westport pays its poll workers $30 an hour. That's just the poll workers. They come up with that at every once in a while at our conferences, and you hear everybody go,
The compensation runs from $50 a day in some towns where they're complaining they can't get poll workers because it's a 16-hour day for $50. That doesn't even...
Yeah.
Buy you lunch and dinner the next day, to $30 an hour for a poll worker. And registrar of voters, we are among the lowest paid, and most of them get a stipend of $15,000 to $20,000 a year for all the work that they do or need to do. And we're required by state law to have office hours 2 hours a week, and we are paid hourly. So, but for each election, we start with prepping for the training, staffing for people and backup people, scheduling the referendum, testing the machines, which has to be done 3 days prior to the election, holding the election, holding a registration day the day before the election, setting up for the election, being at the polling place at 5 a.m. the day of the election and working until we are done at the polling place, then going back to the office and entering the results into the state system to be there by midnight or face a $1,000 personal financial penalty. So we've worked from 5 a.m. till potentially midnight, and most elections, referendums are different, but most elections were in the office till midnight and probably even later. I think the latest week on home is like
one or two.
And that's because we had equipment we couldn't leave out.
As the presidential election, I think wrapped up at like 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Hopefully your referendum.
Well, with the
referendum, that's a simpler one.
We have to go back and put our results in.
Oh yeah, that you do, I'm sure. Yeah.
And the other thing that we do to try to keep the labor costs down is we do feed the poll workers, because it's a little easier to give them a lunch or a dinner and then say, hey, it's not the budget this year, bring a bag lunch, as opposed to then cutting what we pay them.
Yeah.
So this is another, you know, tool that we use to keep costs down, is to for the elections to get donuts in the morning, some fruit, and bagels lunchtime, we go over to Subway, and then typically now we decide to, you know, to keep the cost down and make it easier, as we just go buy a couple of pizzas over at Georgina's, because we already have the town account set up with them. So it's like a whole, it's a lot of stuff. And going back to the fines, the other thing just to clarify is those get levied by the section, you know, by the state election enforcement committee commission. It can be several thousand dollars, and we are not allowed to be insured or have the town pay us back.
Oh, I was just going to ask.
Their personal liability.
So that's why we get a little testy when things don't work the way they should. Yeah. With
having been an elections treasurer, I feel like I get it. It's terrifying.
Yeah, but it's. I've been an election treasurer too, and being a registrar is like, every time you sneeze, you could be fined if it goes in the wrong direction. So,
So that's why you hear us talking about wanting to really be really good about, you know, ADA compliance in particular. And we are told to err on the side of caution in any decisions that we make, that the risk is lower if you allow somebody to vote who maybe shouldn't have, and the state election enforcement commission takes care of it, as opposed to you denied somebody the right to vote that you should have let vote. So there's a whole bunch of considerations. Every election we have to go through and weigh this and often have discussions during the election about what, you know, is the best approach to take, because we are personally liable and there's no, you can't pay for it for us. We're not covered by directors and officers insurance or anything. And again, it's state statute.
So we go back to I just wanted to finish my comment about the comps, right? So I, looking at the table that got cut off, but that I have in front of me, so the wages summary, ultimately, if you assume two registrars, each registrar is getting about $10,000 if we include municipal primaries, audits, and recounts. Without those three items, because the audit and recount may or may not happen in the municipal primary, we may take out, each registrar is essentially only getting about $6,500 a year. So compared to what they were talking about earlier of stipends of $10,000 to $15,000, right? Like that puts us pretty far below some of the comps that you're seeing out there.
Give you an example. As a deputy registrar is getting $17 and change an hour, I put in 100 hours during the early voting because we didn't have enough staff. And it's not just me, it's like Bernice, Sandy, and other people, you know, put in the hours.
I signed off on their timesheets. I would agree. It was a lot of hours. I think what the state asks you to do is untenable. I mean, it's just the amount of hours single individuals have to work.
I think it's who had nobody there.
It's unhealthy.
They were by themselves the whole time, you know, out in like a small, who was that one? Union, I think, or someplace like
no, Canterbury.
Canterbury.
They had days with nobody coming in, and they were forced to be there from 8 in the morning till 6 at night.
And just to clarify, there is no direct word on any legislative relief at this point, because I know that was going to probably be a question. There isn't any. The legislature is doing whatever it is. We're meeting with like Steve Weir and Tim Ackert from Seabrook tomorrow to go over, you know, what it costs, what is the financial and basically personal cost of, you know, doing things the way that we are, and what is the true benefit of it?
Well, you should bring this sheet with you that shows the expenses change from 2023 from 67,000 to now at 136.
Well, this is different than it is 8:30 at Charhouse.
Oh,
this is a Zoom meeting with the registrars in his district and Tim Ackert's district as well.
Yeah. But the cost is more than doubled.
Yeah.
And I assume it's the same for other small towns.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just a question on your budget summary. You said that Bolton will continue to have two districts. Is that including municipals? Where in the municipal election?
Municipals are one district.
Because that's not what this is. Number one. Under the assumption. So is that, how did you figure it out?
We have two districts for anything other than a municipal action. So it would be the municipal election and a referendum we can do in one location as one district. If it's a state or federal election, federal meaning senators or
that's correct.
Federal
this
reps.
Is a one-year budget. So
are you, let me go and look. Hold on. Let me go.
I just didn't know how you, if so we have should have a reduction in cost because we would only be funding one polling station.
Hold on. Let me go and look and see if I made a little goof there. So you're talking about if I look at the charge, you're looking at the municipal election itself, correct?
It says page one, it says budget summary, it has proposed as comparison. Down at the bottom, it says assumptions.
That was one of our assumptions, but I don't
the question is did you
I
put in the hours and staff
well.
Or two locations?
I don't think the staff hours include two separate elections because this is a municipal year.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. If you look in the left of the full spreadsheet, Pam, I have the number of sites that are actually there for the election, and if you look, it's just one site for the actual election. That's just an overall summary that
they may have gotten cut off of y'all's. Oh, yes. But it's, yeah, so the, per site, and then I don't think it's
built. Yeah, so that's one. If you look on each one of the elections, there's a column that's called sites, and that's used as a multiplier for the number of employees, and they're all one in that case. So we are, we can account for that. We just made a general assumption that we're going to keep having through the districts, at least until the next.
To build that into your spreadsheet, so you can just change that to two and have it for next year.
Yes. So
for the clarification.
Yeah. No, I just, this was like a real tedious thing to put together. And
I'm sure.
Made a mistake and forgot to change something. I would be glad to have that pointed out, but
I noticed that there, you've got in about 9 hours for cleanup for each referendum and election. Would it be, if you were able to use a different space for elections, would that cost go down? Like if there was...
The cleanup consists of, we have that tiny little room to fit, you know, it's basically putting 10 pounds of you-know-what into a 5-pound bag in that room, and to get set up for it, it all has to come out, go into the hallway, and then it all has to get come back from, you know, say St. Morris or the school, gets dumped in the hallway. I and other people then have to go through it all. We have to go replenish all the supplies that were taken out of the box. We have a checklist we use before each election to go through what each poll worker's supply box contains. And then when the election is over, we do the same thing. We go through and make sure what supplies are missing. We put it back in. So it's a
I'm not questioning the 9 hours. What my question is, if there were a dedicated, or not a dedicated, but if there were a space in town somewhere where elections could be held on a regular basis that maybe had storage right there, would that cut down on a lot of those 9 hours?
I would say it could cut them, but it wouldn't be in half.
Okay.
It would probably be 2/3, if that
much. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're replenishing everything that you put out. So no matter where, you've got to redo it and make sure it's in the proper.
So let's say, just to your point, you know, let's just say that this was our polling area in here, and we had the boxes locked up over in the selectman's office. So we still have to go through that whole drill of bringing it out there, making sure that everything is in it. This all happens before the election, setting it up out here. And then after the election, it still has to be all gone through and then wheeled back into that room. Mm-hmm. So you might save a little bit, but I think you probably save more on the town crews part because they don't have to pick it up and drag it over and, you know, do overtime and maybe make it necessary for getting it out of the schools. So I think that's where you probably see more of the savings would be. Town school wouldn't have to do as much.
Okay.
So, which I don't account for, you know, in this. Yes.
Yep.
When do we usually get the budgets from the Secretary of State's office or the contracts for the maintenance? Because those were just estimates, right?
They're telling us maybe during the summer. They're prioritizing the
so after our budget.
Towns that have special elections and then those that have May elections, and then they'll go to towns according to size. So
the way at the bottom.
They also were saying who has an election of any kind earlier. So we put in that we have a referendum. They said they would get us the new tabulators before the election. And when asked, what does that mean? Do you have a list with any timing? They told me personally, no. You'll get them when you get them. And they were also mentioned that because of that, one or two towns had already said they're going to use the old machines for their referenda. And then they were told, well, that's your responsibility. And well, yeah. So I think I would feel the same way because we have no familiarity with these machines. And even if you get the training, you don't have the machines to be playing with when you get the training. It's a lot, it's a big issue. And you might not actually use them in the referendum, but use them in the municipal elections. It all depends, you know, what we hear And I'd already talked to Jim about that, which is why, you know, another use for that little space we were talking about in the camp building there was also to cover those machines. I think the most that I can fit in the, it's like a Rubik's Cube in the storage room is four. We have four in there now. Mm-hmm. I can put four in there, but there's no place to put the other new ones because they're a unit. The other ones, the ones we have currently, the tabulator, the actual voting machine is separate from the ballot box. You stick it on top and lock it into place for the election. And these, they're an integrated unit. You don't take them out, put them on top of the table and use them, but that really doesn't do anything for you. It's the ballot just goes to the back. And
we currently have four and we're getting six. Eight.
So I have one final question. And has the Secretary of State's office ever considered the state providing the liability for the registrars? I say one of the issues you mentioned here tonight is the liability that you all face. And I would think that would be a state.
The state statutes.
I'm sorry.
They would have to, it's statutory.
Right, right. Well, I know that, but they have to get their butts in gear and correct it, because that to me seems to be a major
flaw. That's a thing for your state reps.
Yeah.
They probably feel like if they paid for insurance, then people wouldn't be motivated to operate ethically.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't necessarily.
I understand
agree with that,
but it seems to put the registrars out to dry.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be a better solution. I don't know what it is, but I'm just wondering if in your process, somebody is actually trying to consider it.
This is it's a really weird job. It's a little bit similar to the town clerk. We have a state job that is, we report to the Secretary of State, yet we're paid by the town to, you know, and the state, you know, we're elected by, you know, eventually, because we're on the state election schedule. So we're, you know, basically somebody who's a state official was paid for by the town to manage each town, you know, the town's elections. So it's really a bizarre place because we're twixt and tween. We're not really, you know, the town as though we are at some times, and other times we don't. And it's confusing to us at times as well as to our town officials.
Can I ask one salary question?
Please.
When I was looking at over some of the points that you brought up, the different salaries, and the liability, the personal liability that is pressured on the registrars and moderators. The moderators should be paid, perhaps instead of raising them to 19 feet, raise them to the level of a deputy registrar, to 22, to be able to attract more. Are we short of moderators?
Mary can be a moderator, and we have.
Oh, so let me ask Mary, not to answer the question.
Yeah.
but to address it to Sandy and Ross,
they actually face some of the same liabilities. They can be.
That's what I was saying.
They can be disciplined, you know, by the SEC, and
so should they not be paid equal to a deputy registrar at 22?
We would not object if Fleckman decided $22 was appropriate for moderators. There has to be a moderator for every election.
And every polling place.
And every polling place.
Yes.
And I understand trying to save money, but I also believe in respecting the office and respecting the ability to get people to do the job. Because it requires the training and background. Mary, nod, that's all you can
do. They have a lot of the same training and stuff we do.
Exactly. Thank you for your answer.
Yeah, the other one too that I would mention is that we also, as registrars, manage a workforce, basically temporary workforce that comes and goes. It's about 40, it can be up to 40 people if we're doing a primary. So it's also quite a large, you know, workforce to train, retain, and then schedule them. Usually takes 2 or 3 months. Back and forth with them, find out who's available, book a couple of people, you know, as reserves and so forth, so that if somebody shows up, doesn't show up, we got some coverage for them.
Yeah.
So it's I think it's one of the larger workforces in town outside of the Board of Education that we have to pull together, you know, one or two times a year, and then it's gone and you have to do it all over again, which is harder than if you have somebody there all the time.
I had another question I forgot to ask. The data entry clerk, what's that? And is that something that, like, we have filled by various people, or do we have a set?
We have a, we established data entry clerk a couple years ago after just about missing a deadline, because after being on your feet running an election, it's very, very easy to make a mistake. The data entry clerk comes in and after the poll, about the time the polls close, and then works 6 hours until, or how many hours it takes until our reports are settled. And that allows the moderator and the registrars to be answering questions and reviewing the data as it goes in, rather than being responsible for actually typing, because that's when the errors start to happen, when somebody's typing and nobody's reviewing.
Right, because what we have to do at the polls is enter everything into, as a moderator, what's called a moderator's return. So it's basically like closing out a drawer at a bank. You have to count for all the ballots that you got, all the ones that were used, all the ones that were marked in error. Everything has to total up. There's a whole bunch of forms like that. Either the moderator has to sign off on them. This includes like how many absentee ballots and such they received, how many early voting ballots. Fill this all out in paper while you're also trying to keep an eye on people and making sure that they're doing what they need to while closing out. And then you go back to the office. And if I try to enter that, I may have made a mistake somewhere. And then I have to go enter it to the state system. So what the data entry clerk does is he or she then looks at what I have done, and they're the ones that check it against, you know, the tapes and the documents against the summary that I give, you know, handwritten summary, and then they are the ones that with me or whoever else was the moderator enter it into the state system. And then there's another follow-up 2 days later with the town clerk to certify, you know, the election. So we go over it again so that, you know, there's two checks. There's first the moderator, then the data entry clerk, then the town clerk, you know, checks it. And then the moderator has to put a wet signature on it, mail it off to the state, in addition to filing it electronically. So that's just all part of, it's part of the QA, and it's, they've been very helpful because they catch most of the stuff they call is transpositions, where it should have been in column A, we put it in column B. It doesn't affect the total, but statistically, right, you know, they want it. It needs to be accurate. And so they're a big help, you know, catching stuff like that.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate what you all do. And I think I'm glad you went through the explanation so for the record, people have a better sense of all the crap you have to contend with. And you are the victims of that wonderful state unfunded mandate.
We all are. I wouldn't say it's just us. It's the taxpayers of the town.
It's the taxpayers of the country.
Okay.
And I do want to thank Sandy, because last year she had put together her version of that spreadsheet and I built upon it. So I just want to thank her for that. Just recognize for her for taking
it. Well, you guys do a good job. And we all appreciate it.
A lot of
Excuse me. Could I get the last names of Sandy, and is it Bernice or Denise?
No, Bernice isn't here. Bernice is not here.
Okay, Denise.
No, it's Bernice, and she is not here at the meeting.
Oh, okay. Then the other lady to his left in the purple?
Mary Terhune. T-E-R-H-U-N-E.
Okay, and then Sandy's last name?
Sandra Pierog. P-I-E-R-O-G.
And then that's Ross Lally, I assume, right?
Correct.
Yes, it is. Process
Thank you. Thank you.
Not from my grade.
You're welcome. Does anyone else have any questions?
Only thing I'll say is that Milford and West Hartford, based on my Googling, has given substantive raises to their registrars and deputies to the tune of $50,000 a year for their
How
registrars.
Much? 50. 50. 50.
wonder if that would pay for me to work at West Hartford.
So that,
I don't know.
For their registrars, set their salary.
That's their salary. That's not the raise they were given.
For West Hartford, it was a 60% raise. And Milford, I'd have to look up again, but it was there's 60% raise brought them to 47,500, and for Milford they went up to 56,000.
Yeah, and some of the differences, they're probably full time and such. I don't know personally whether they are or not, but
right,
some
and
of the larger
yeah.
towns and cities do have the registrars full time
and more office staff. Hours, right? Mm-hmm. And more office hours.
It says registrars are elected while deputy registrars are appointed, and both are part-time positions.
Well, it's okay. The definition of part-time.
Awesome question.
Well, right.
Right. I know.
Well, all we know is you guys are in a tough position for that. Thank you again.
Tried to find somebody.
Anybody else? Any questions? If not,
do we do the other one next?
Yes, we're going right into
get over that.
That one's
easy. Yes.
We take all 5 minutes.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee, same budget as last year, plus $300 that Mr. Moore suggested we tack in there when we were all arguing about how much do we need to pay for extra staff. Bob's, Bob just said, you know what, we're going to spend more talking about it than just doing it. So we added $300 to our staff, basically our clerk for the meetings.
Anybody else have any questions? Sure. If that's not, it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. On to recreation, and our director's here, and floor is yours.
So I do have my summary to pass out to you guys again, which is usually on the last page of my entire packet, because the total for payroll for the director.
Let me catch up to you.
It's all the way at the beginning. Yes. Okay. So the total is actually slightly lower than what was submitted in the packet for the payroll, all the way at the top, and the request for town support. So I'll just pass that around so you have it. That was a math error on my fault, on my part. So overall, I am still requesting $14,348 from the town for supporting my budget. And I will explain some of the reasons why and kind of go into some of the things I'm trying to do to mitigate some of the requests of support that I have in there. I'm hoping, and I've been talking with Jim for the last couple of years, to try to get my department fully self-funded. However, we have seen increases every year with minimum wage, and the cost of supplies has gone up. So the reason that the difference is a little bit more this year is because there were certain programs that I expected to go a certain way last year that either didn't do as well or supplies were more expensive. And then I'm in the process of trying to find some more programs and events that can bring more money into the department. But that is the reason why it is still slightly larger than last year, and I am still requesting town support this year. So I do need to send in a new piece of paper that has the right totals on it for the budget workshop thing as well. I need to send that to Kathy. But just an explanation of the only portion that the recreation budget can cut is that amount that we're requesting from the town to support. And this is, like I said, due to salary increases, staff pay increases, the cost of supplies, less people signing up for certain programs than we anticipated. And then that being said, the revenue does not cover the expenses and needs the town support to break even. The minimum wage continues to increase yearly, and this has added an additional, the number there I have is $3,793.57. That needs to be changed because it is a little bit less because I'm asking for less in town support on my updated summary. So some of the things I'm trying to do to mitigate this or have done to mitigate this, some of the things that I've accomplished this year. I did change our sponsorship packet to being completely online, which saved us over $124 on postage on average a year. paper and envelopes because I'm sending those sponsorship packets over email instead of sending in snail mail. We started adult programming back up post-COVID, and we have added adult drop-in pickleball, which has brought in $618 into the department in 2022 and 2023, and $1,310 in 2023 and 2024. Our basketball program has seen significant growth in the last few years, where we had 120 kids in 2021 and 2022, 141 kids in 2022-2023, 174 kids in 2023-2024, and then this year we had 165 kids because we only had one travel team instead of two. So there's significant growth in our basketball program. I've also decided this year to try to cut bus costs over summer camp. We usually take the kids to the lake every other week during the summer, and we will just be having parents drop the kids off at the lake instead of us taking a bus, which will save us another $1,000 and change in bus costs, potentially even more because the bus costs continue to raise every year, unfortunately. We also took on the Mad Science after school programs from the school, which is actually bringing in about $400 to $500 each fall, winter, and spring, which is awesome. I've been wanting to take over that program for a couple of years.
What is that one?
Mad Science.
Which is?
It's an after school program.
Yeah.
It's they do a lot of different things. It's like chemical creation, science experiments.
It's fun like stuff. Fun science stuff.
Yeah. Fun science stuff for the kids.
Right up my alley. Great.
The last few years, we've raised the fees at Indian Notch Park. I did not propose that this year just because I wanted to see if, you know, we could come up with some other ideas that aren't going to continue to raise the rates for our town folk to go to our lake, because it is an asset that I want to continue to promote people to come.
We did increase the availability of Indian Notch Park for rentals.
Yep, so we are going to be... previously, the pavilion was only able to be rented when the lake was open during the summer, but we will be advertising this year that people can rent it during the spring and the fall when the lake is closed for the public, so people can use the pavilion for, you know, birthday parties or family reunions, which will bring in, hopefully, a lot of money, because Herrick Park, I don't know if you've heard, but we usually get Herrick Park rentals, you know, every other weekend. So I'm hoping that we can bring in some money that way as well.
That'll be new this year, fall and spring. Okay.
Yeah, that's new this year. I have a whole list and I don't want to blab your ears off, but I am trying to come up with new ways to bring money into the department and to try to cut the amount of money that the town is supporting each year. It's hard because minimum wage is continuing to rise. So things are still expensive, and I'm hoping that will stop eventually, but we don't know at what point they're gonna stop raising minimum wage each year.
Well, that's not gonna stop.
Probably. Those are some of the reasons why we are still requesting support from the town. And that's about it.
Comments.
Go figure. I was wondering, so we do see on our AP report sometimes like returned funds due to low enrollment. Like, have we done any type of analysis of what kinds of events are getting under enrolled, or have we done surveys or solicitations of the public of what kind of things they'd like to see more of?
Yes. So I sent out surveys over the last few years. The programs that we have a lot of trouble with are our after-school programs, like our half-day hangouts and our professional development days. And we have also had to cancel a couple of our kids' night out programs. So it's a lot of childcare programs that we're seeing issues with. The half-day hangout program used to be really successful before COVID. We were getting like 15, 16 kids each day. Since COVID, I think parents have a lot more flexibility in their schedules. And people had to get creative during COVID. So I think a lot of family members might, you know, help out with that. So I have tried to get our half-day hangout program up and running the last couple of years. And same with the professional development day program and the kids' night out, which is like you can drop your kids off for like a date night. It's not seeming like that's really what parents are looking for anymore. So I've sent out surveys. I've gotten mixed results. I think I need to steer away from those types of programs and focus more on like toddler programs because we don't have a lot of those right now besides our soccer programs and maybe more adult fitness programs because those are popular. I'm kind of in the, right now I'm kind of trying out a bunch of things to see what sticks. And I am due to send out another survey to the town to see what they might be looking for this year because it's been, I think, a year and a half since I've sent one out. So,
and how do you usually send those out? Is it the rec department listserv? Or?
So I usually will put it in the bulletin.
Okay, in the bulletin.
The listserv that I have. And then I will sometimes, and I usually email out surveys to people after a program has run. So like basketball's ending in a week. So I'll be sending a survey out to parents then to find out, you know, programs that are working, what has gone well and what we should improve on those. So
thank you.
Anyone else?
Just a question. The gate price to get into the lake, if there's an average of 5,000 visitors that generates $25,000 a year. This, what if I assume... But I've never been, but it's $5 to get in.
I don't know if I have it listed out here. It's different if you're in town, out of town, if it's a weekday,
or weekend.
Okay.
But the number that I got from there is based on John Butramovich, who's our head of the buildings and grounds. They keep track of how much money we've made at the gate every year. So that was like an average to what we made last year with the rates raised.
And the thing of it is, that is weather driven.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's a big number. I see that like a season's pass for a resident, there's only 12 residents buy those, but 25 non-residents buy them at double the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just raised them last year.
Curious, you know. At 5,000 visitors, you know, like could that, if raising the price again at the gate, $1 or across the board, that could generate, given that, that could generate another $5,000.
And
I don't think that would deter anybody
for
$1 more.
Yeah.
Right. Is the 5,000 visitors cars or people?
It's cars. Yeah, you pay by car.
Cars are up to a certain number of people.
Right. Yeah, up to four people. And then I believe they charge an extra $5 per additional person.
Yeah.
I don't have the prices on this packet, but I believe it was $5 for a resident on weekdays and $7 on weekends.
Yep.
And $15 on weekdays, $25 on weekends for non-residents.
Right. So, we just raised them last year.
And I think we can sell the kayaks more. That's a relatively new thing. And I remember we did the kayaking thing, right? And someone was like, you should rent these out during the sun. And we're like, we do.
And that's actually what I was reading off of earlier was some of the stuff that I've done. That was not in my packet. That was just me kind of compiling what I've done in the last couple of years. But I want to do some more like kayak events like we did really try to push the kayak rentals. I had talked about doing kayak rentals off season, but they would have to drive here and get the kayak in their car. And we didn't end up putting that out yet. So that's something that I'm toying with as well.
The thing we also looked at the cost of a kayak vending machine.
Yes.
about paddle boards, the stand up?
That would be a good idea too. We don't have them. We got the kayaks from a grant from the Eastern Highlands Health District. So that's how we acquired them. So we've just been using what we have, but I think paddle boards are pretty cheap. And if we purchased some,
I think more popular now than kayaks.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons that the rental fees are so reasonable on the kayaks is because Eastern Highlands Health District discouraged us from charging anything at all.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because they gave us the grant.
Yeah, the grant was supposed to.
So we explained to them that people needed to have some skin in the game to take care of the equipment and so on and so forth. So they were accepting of the low rates. At some point, we kind of take control and can adjust those rates as we please.
But we can probably adjust them like this year or next year, honestly, because mm-hmm. they haven't checked in with me in a year or so since right. we got them. So
there you go.
Anyone else? Yes.
Just first on the kayak issue, after the two people drowned in the spring last year, I had a resident of the lake say to me, please don't, please tell the town they should not be renting kayaks, because she observes people going out there all the time who don't realize that it's great when you go with the wind, and then when you're trying to get back against the wind, it's a real problem. And there, so I'm not... I just wanted to bring this up, that it's something if before we try to, if before we expand the kayak rental situation, I think we really have to give that some thought.
We require life jackets.
Yeah.
None of those people had life saving.
But we were, I think that might have been why we didn't, especially because it was last year when those things happened.
And it was cold weather.
It was cold weather. And we were talking about expanding the program and letting people rent them off season. But I think that was one of the deterrents, because we didn't want to do that so quick after that happened. So, but they do get a life jacket and they get the paddles and the kayak. But that is something to think about for sure. We do a waiver, and the waiver kind of like talks about like the hold harmless waiver. Mm-hmm. But you know, if something were to happen in the kayak, of course, the hold harmless waiver isn't always going to hold up in court.
Yeah.
So
none of those people would have drowned if they were had proper safety gear on. That's the issue. I'm a kayaker, and it's the number you surprising number of people simply do not have it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were, two of them were landscapers, unfortunately, who, you know, yeah. they weren't out there for recreation. It was
right.
And my lifeguards do inspect all the equipment before they go out. And they do have to have the life jacket on before they can launch to the side. So that does help. But, you know, things can happen, unfortunately.
Now, that's the word accident.
Yeah.
but I'm glad to see that we do have the proper equipment there and the safety issues. Man, no, I'm sorry. Sorry, Gwen.
My question is, on your, it's the decision package, it mentioned, without this money, the recreation department will be in a deficit in staff pay and director salary will have to be funded by dipping into the savings account.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what that savings account is?
It's the recreation round fund. That's what all of the revenue from my department goes into. And for a while there, we had a pretty big amount of money saved up from over the years. But as costs have increased, we've had to dip into that to cover the costs of the programs and the salaries.
And it took a real hit during the three COVID years because
that's what
there
did
were
it.
Very few programs.
Yeah, so we really dipped into it quite a bit during those 3 years. And due to some of the programming that used to be very successful that isn't anymore, like some of the childcare programs, I'm trying to pivot right now so that we're, you know, doing something different that's going to be more successful than those programs. But right now we're not breaking even, or we're just not breaking even. I don't know what my totals were for last year. And if we broke even or not, I think I had a deficit of 2000 last year.
Sounds about right.
Do you know how much is left in that savings account?
I think, I don't know what's left in there. I want to say Jill said there was maybe 80,000.
Oh.
But don't quote me on that. I'm not really sure. But the point is we don't want to keep dipping into it because at some point it's going to be depleted and then there's going to be nothing left
but
in
the
there.
Point isn't the point of that fund to fund these activities? Like, we're not trying to earn investments off of it, so what's wrong with spending it?
At some point, if you spend it all away, then you're, you know, going to have to start making cuts, I'm assuming. I don't know.
Well, you either make cuts or you supplement the budget with taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
Which we're doing already.
Well, very minimal.
We're proposing to do it.
Well, so the 14. Well,
what if they want to make a capital investment in something later on? Then they have the.
I don't know if that's an eligible expense. We'd have to look at when the fund was created. Was it an ordinance, Bob?
What if they want to buy 40 kayaks?
wow, we did. Wow, that we
paddleboards.
paddle boards.
We did that over 20 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
I really don't. But
we'd have to look at the rules when the fund was established.
The idea was to
buy a motor boat, and then you could tow the people that get stuck.
Because we initially funded 100%, and the round fund was to bring in where you could take savings, set it aside, put it in a round fund. Not savings, but earnings, and which we've had. COVID destroyed that whole process.
It had significantly more.
So this thing has been, if you will, it's a safety belt. If something like that happens again, that's going to get hit hard once again. So is that the right number to have as safety number? I can't tell you that, but that's the reason why it's there. We may want to look at it and see if. Is that a good number to hold? Or could we use, and as you asked, could we use it for a capital type investment to help generate more income? That's a good question. We have to look at it.
The 14,348 is your request over because the recreational round fund doesn't have enough money in it. So
It's because my budget, and again, my budget's a little bit different than the other budgets because it's basically a wish list. It's just me saying this is how many programs I want to offer, and this is what I think is going to, how much revenue that's going to generate. But the request that I was requesting is to break even at that point. So that would be the money that I would need for the year to cover all of our expenses.
Based on this budget. Yeah.
Yes, based on this budget.
So all you're asking us for is $14,000.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Everything else is funded by your program.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
revenue.
So even with the 14,348, there is still money in the recreation round fund.
Yes. I don't know how much is in there. I would have to ask Jill. But it would have enough to cover that, but I don't know how much is in it.
So I guess I don't understand why we wouldn't just use that money. That's what it's for. You know, instead of increasing other parts of the budget, if we already got the money there.
Well, I think last year you asked us for what, 6,000 was the final number, I want to say. Yeah. Starting around 4, I think went up to like 6. And then you're saying you ended up 8,000 in the deficit and took 2 from the savings account, essentially.
I think so.
Roughly.
Something
so
like
there's a chance that your deficit runs higher than the 14,348, and that is definitely going to have to come from the savings account.
Yeah. And it's hard to determine what exactly, like I keep track of our spending and what comes in, but you can't really guess if people are going to
estimating the income.
Yeah, it's a budget.
And there's certain things that you can estimate that this program is going to work out, and then the reality is it might not. So then you have to pivot and try something new, which is kind of where I've been at in the last couple of years. But it's all, you know, if people sign up for programs or not.
So basically, should you have a plus season and you're in with a net 20 grand, you won't have to even utilize this.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. If you have a successful year, be it wherever the revenues come from, then this doesn't even have to be.
And the net goes into the round fund, if there is a net.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I request goes into the town fund, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that makes sense.
That's Tim.
Who organizes, I see you organize youth basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Who organizes the youth soccer program?
The Is Bolton Soccer Club. Yeah, they're separate from
it's
us.
It's a private thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. And I am assuming that the 80, well, whatever's in that round fund is part of it's not part of the general fund, but it's in our bank account where it's earning interest.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty, right. So remember the way that municipal government operates is, for the most part, everything is in one big pot.
Bank account, yeah.
But we separate it by funds.
Right. Which is just semantic.
Anyone else have a question? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steph.
And that wraps it up. A motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Somebody second, please.
Sure.
Thank you. Motion is made and seconded. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
We adjourn. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.